our podcast website, newdimensions.org.
I'm talking with Mark Coleman. And Mark, there's something intriguing that you write about in a way of meditating that's available to us. And I'm familiar with sitting and standing meditation, but you bring in the concept of meandering with joy and delight as if that were up to us. And so I'm just wondering about, what is this meandering that you write about?
Yeah. So meandering is definitely one of my favorite nature practices that I teach, but it's also one of my favorite things I do when I'm in the woods or along a coastline or out anywhere in nature. I mostly like to go off trail, especially when I'm in the wilderness, which is often no trails, and just let myself, my body, be drawn, or the word I like is allured, to feel my body being allured. And what I mean by that is I'm out in the meadow and it's hot, and so I'm drawn into the shade. So I walk into the woods and I feel the shade, and then there's a particular tree that feels like it's just calling me and catching my interest. And so I walk to the tree and I might want to touch its bark. Maybe it's a silver birch or a eucalyptus or something. And I feel its bark and notice the temperature of the bark. And then I might be drawn to smelling it because I know, oh, this is an old ponderosa that's been sunning in the sun and it smells like caramel or vanilla. And then I'm with that for time. And then I'm notice down below me, there's these beautiful mosses on the ground. And so maybe I get on my hands and knees and, you know, put my hand through the mosses and do that for a while and get up. And then there's a patch of sunlight coming through the trees, lighting up a particular shrub. And so I'm drawn to that. And I notice the shrub has these particularly glossy leaves. So I start rubbing the leaves and I notice, oh, they're fragrant. They smell like bay. They smell like, you know, sage. And so the meandering is literally that you're wandering, meandering, mindful, slow, embodied, very attuned to your senses, very attuned to the sensory landscape. And rather than your head going, okay, I want to check out the view from that vista and go check out this gulch. No, you just let yourself moment to moment be drawn, pulled, allured. So like you're dancing a little bit with the landscape. And you can do that for a few minutes. You can do that for a few hours. Sometimes I do it all day. I'm just sort of meandering, or what we used to call in England bimbling. We bimble through the landscape and just enjoying. And it's a very way, it's a way to feel very connected, intimate, attuned, and embedded into that landscape. And it's something, especially it's easier to do if it's cold or it's rainy. You can still do that and just bundle up, and you can do it in the snow or in the rain.
It feels like being a kid again, just hearing you talk about this, and almost like play might be a synonym for meandering.
It is. And so much of these practices bring out that childlike nature, that childlike curiosity, which sadly we tend to lose or get disconnected from as adults. We tend to view nature from afar through a window, or we look at it, but we rarely would, like when I'm walking outside, I'm always physically touching, like I'm rubbing the bay leaves or the sage, or if it's dewy, I'm touching the dew on the moss, or I'm smelling, I'm getting up close to the soil or to the bark of a tree. Nature practice is a way of reawakening our senses that become deadened as we live these indoor lives. And it's playful, it's joyful. And just like children, they're into everything. They don't think some dirt and soil is dirty. They just think it's soil, and it's plain. It's got bugs in it, and it's got shells and stones. And so, yeah, it's rekindling that childlike wonder.
And you're reminding me also of a previous New Dimensions guest, John O'Donohue, who said, enter the quiet immensity of your own presence. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking outward here, and I'm wondering what you're speaking about, how it can relate to the connection with ourselves, with our own presence, with our own silence.
Yeah. So that's also a great reflection around Nature does mirror because we are nature. So we are mirrored in its midst. And and I often will quote that John O'Hugh poem. And he says in another line in that poem, he says something about wake up to the joy of the senses, something like that. I'm not doing it justice. Sorry, John, wherever you are. But yes, what often comes, especially as we spend some period of time in nature, particularly if it's away from the hubbub of houses and cars and whatnot, we can feel into the presence of landscape. For example, I live near the redwood trees and Muir Woods, the groves, and so I'll go and hang out with the redwoods. And I'm walking in these trees where 1,000-year-old trees, sometimes 2,000-year-old trees, and there's a definite presence of the trees and a stillness in the landscape. And of course, because we're connected, that has an impact. I start to feel more still in myself. I start to feel more rooted, more grounded, more presenceful, more aware, more tranquil. And again, I think it's one of the reasons why I teach and encourage people to go outside, because we're very influenced by our environment and what we expose ourselves to. So if we're watching a lot of TV, we're probably very stimulated. If we're walking along the beach a lot, we'll be influenced more by the waves than anything else. So we become, rolling waves. We go out into the silence of a desert and we start to feel quiet and still. And we go out for a walk on a wild, raging, stormy day and we feel invigorated and enlivened and maybe wild. Or we walk through a sunflower meadow in France or wherever it happened to be, and we feel joy and delight. And so this nature provides so many gifts and opportunities to shift our mental state, our state of heart, and particularly in these times that are stressful, and we're just coming out of the pandemic, and all the ills that we're faced with. And yet we can also access joy and beauty and delight and rapture and ecstasy and tranquility, which is so important for our own humanity, but also to stay resilient, to stay nourished in a stressful environment, stressful time.
And part of this nourishment and resilience that you talk about, for me, it seemed like a juxtaposition to also be invited into feeling the pain in our body, perhaps at times. Or you write even about an ability to confront our fear by going into nature at nighttime. And so this was very intriguing for me, and I didn't know what my response to that might be, because even just hearing about that does bring up some fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the nature will evoke a whole range of the entirety of our human experience. We can experience anxiety getting lost on the trail. We can experience fear when I'm leading groups up in the alpine forests in northern New Mexico, and there's a lot of lightning and lightning strikes. Definitely there's fear. And if I'm backpacking at night, backpacking and camping out in the wilderness on my own, at night I am a lot, and I hear rustles, and I'm in bear country, I'm in cougar country, there'll be some fear. What is that sound? It's outside my tent. But again, it's a great opportunity to work with our humanity and to also, there's a lot of adversity in nature, whether it's, animals or bugs or, harsh conditions. And so one of the things we're cultivating is a sense of resilience and equanimity and steadiness. How do we stay steady in the midst of this sort of very often demanding and, sometimes life-threatening experience? So it provides all of those kind of supports for growth in a way.
I really appreciate hearing that. It is it's typical. What I was drawn to in the book was definitely the call towards the stillness and the connection part. And so when you speak also of the dynamism, the thunderstorms, the lightning, the danger per se, the tidal waves we have at times, volcanoes, and even down to the mosquitoes. So just recognizing too that if we're committed to not being separate from nature, that this is also part of the experience to include.
Yeah, we've had a lot of storms here in California, and many, many days, long hikes in the rain, in the storms, up and down waterfalls and creeks, and it's alive. I don't think I feel anywhere more alive than in a wildly windy, rainy, stormy day, listening to the gushing, rushing creeks and streams. And I'm an advocate of getting out in all weathers, and there's gifts in all of it. I hiked out to a lake the other day, and it was still, and the reflection was dreamy of the hillsides. And then sometimes I'm by the ocean, and it's wild and stormy and tempestuous and fierce and invigorating, you know. So it's there's something beautiful about feeling the range of experience, and also feeling that range of experience within ourselves, because what we're experiencing outside is being mirrored in a certain way inside.
And in addition to the listening of this mirror, you also talk about silence being that mirror too. So not only the dynamism, but the absolute silence, which is different than a flat silence that one would find indoors if we're just coming off our devices or needing to separate from that.
Yeah, there's a profundity of different kinds of silences outdoors. And I think of silence, and I think many spiritual traditions and mystics do, silence as a doorway to many things, to profundity, to mystery, the silence of a redwood grove has its own quality, and the silence of the desert at night has its own quality. And the silence, sometimes we're in a forest and there's, a million cicadas chirping, and yet still there's a silence within the sound. So there's both silence and a lot of sound and cacophony, but that we can also find the silence that permeates even the loudest landscape. And that's a mystery in itself.
I'm speaking with Mark Coleman, author of A Field Guide to Nature Meditation and Awake in the Wild. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to markcoleman.org. That's markcoleman.org. Or you can get there at newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm with Mark Coleman, and we've been speaking about meditation as a revolutionary act. And I'm wondering how we can use this practice and our understanding of connecting with nature more to work with the eco crisis that we're currently facing as a species and as a planet.
Well, we're definitely facing ecological catastrophe on a lot of different levels. And, you know, one of the bases for the work that I do, both personally and in my teaching, is this notion that we protect what we love. And that's a commonly used expression, but it's very much spoken to me in the work that I do in nature, because what happens when we go outdoors, especially for any length of time, what we find quite often, quite easily, is that we can be easily touched, moved, inspired by many things in the natural world. It might be the cherry blossoms that are coming out in front of my house. It might be the screech of a red-shouldered hawk. It might be the trickle of a babbling brook. It might be the frozenness of a lake in winter. Oh, just so many things can move us, but particularly I'd say animals and the plant world and the forests and the trees. We're often moved in a way that's so important, because we live mostly disconnected from the earth, from living beings and species, that when we hear about the latest, you know, data from, say, the, you know, a UN body, the IPCC, or some other climate report, it can land as some abstract notion. It can, you know, we hear about the, you know, parts per million of carbon in the air, and 350, but now it's up to 423. But it doesn't compute in terms of our nervous system, in terms of our heart. But when we go outside, like I do often here in California, Northern California, and I'm hiking in summer and the fall, and I'm in the beauty of the forest and the mountains, and all I'm smelling is smoke. And I'm realizing that the thing that I'm loving, the forest, the mountains, the wildness, the wilderness, is burning up millions of acres a year. That becomes a very visceral, embodied, heartful experience. It's not some abstract notion that we're losing such and such a percentage of forest per year. It's like, oh no, these beings, like when I was hiking in the sequoias, the ancient sequoias last year, and I was walking through these magnificent groves of 2,000-3,000-year-old trees, and I'm walking through groves that are blackened and charred and roasted trees, and it's heartbreaking. And to see that which you love being destroyed, you know, or you go to your favorite stream or beach and you see the pollution washed up on the shore, or you you know, you notice that there's much less songbirds, like it's 60% less in England than there were 50 years ago. And I'm a lover of birds and birdsong. And so when we feel that viscerally, it moves us. And we know that what moves people is emotion, is the heart. And when we love something, whether it's a child, an animal, a grandchild, a rose bush, when we love it, we want to take care of it. We want to protect it. We want to steward it. We want to nourish it as well as we can. So it's for me, having people go outside and connecting, opening their hearts open, they feel connected and loved. That's what's going to motivate people to become better stewards and better guardians of their garden, their watershed, their ecosystem, and the earth. That's what's going to make us wake up to the fact that we need to take way better and radically quick care of what's happening to our earth, of this place that we call home, that we love.
What I'm hearing, again, in that we protect what we love, is that you are holding both pieces of the equation, the the receptivity, the nourishment, the love, the gift that we give, but also the protection part, which may be a little more action-oriented about doing something to lead, to protect these environments towards the conservation, even healing, I would say, and restoration of what might need protecting.
Yeah, it's, you know, often people think of meditation and mindfulness as somewhat passive, and it does have a passive side. It has a side of watching and observing and noticing and being aware of, but it also gives rise to action, ultimately, in a sort of a, in the fullness of what meditation is. It's an engaged relationship with life. And so the awareness is deepening our connection, deepening our sensitivity, that ultimately deepens our love and hopefully a responsiveness or an active engagement with asking, as I'll often ask this question in my programs, you know, how does the earth wish to move through you? How is the earth moving through you? And as you are a part of the earth, what is an effective way to live your life that's an expression of care for the earth, which is yourself?
I'm wondering, what do you see is the next offering within nature meditation? What is the next frontier?
I think, you know, it's sort of all the things I've been talking about. It's just it's a step-by-step process. And it begins with the very simple act of going outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds ridiculously simple,
yes,
just go outside. But it's really true. I mean, I've been doing this work for 20, 30 years and teaching it similarly. And yet I can be cocooned in my house all day because it's warm and comfortable, and that's where my computer is. And then I forget and I go outside and it's like, oh, the light shining through the clouds is magnificent on this post-stormy day. And I feel almost taste the spring greenness in the air. It feels so fresh. And I might take a walk and I see, as I'm looking around, looking out my window, I'm seeing the, you know, new buds on the trees. I'm seeing the buckeye leaves just bursting through, like I used to in England, the chestnut trees, the way they come out of these little cocoons, little furry cocoons, and they burst open. And I'm feeling like, wow, like how incredibly regenerative life is, how intelligent to know exactly when to open their leaves to become harvesters of the sun. And so I'm minute by minute, I'm floored by the wisdom, beauty, intelligence of nature and all of it's the ways that it manifests and survives and thrives. And it reminds me of what's important. And what's important is, right, remembering this earth and its beauty and its sacredness and its worthiness to be tended to and cared for and acknowledged, you know, in Robin Wall Kimmerer's book, The Braiding Sweetgrass, she talks about her teachers saying, you know, there's not many things asked of us humans. We're given so much water and sunlight and food but we're asked to pay attention to this one precious sacred earth and also to offer gratitude.
And it's this paying attention that you've contrasted a few times in today's so-called attention economy, where the screens are vying for that precious resource and that it's even more of a draw. And so the opposite intention to come to the invitation you're offering seems even a bigger challenge these days.
It is. You know, there's a lot, as you say, competing for our attention. And it takes a certain either, you know, remembering or will or reminders that, you know, what we can see looking at the ocean can never be replicated on a screen, however wonderful our nature programs are. And I enjoy watching nature programs, but it's nothing compared to taking in a sunset or a sunrise or watching a bird dive into the water or even watching a little worm weave its way across the footpath. Like there's something just enlivening, wakes us up out of our, you know, we live in a sort of very self-referential world. And again, when we step outside, we realize, oh, there's a whole cosmos here that's happening in this beautiful symmetry that's got, you know, that makes my little petty problems so insignificant. And it's important that we get a different frame of reference because our lives and our screens just keep reflecting back our own self-importance. But actually, when we go into nature, we see, oh, we're just part of this living web. One teeny piece, just like, you know, every creature and every tree is just part of that ecosystem.
I've been speaking with Mark Coleman, author of A Field Guide to Nature Meditation and Awake in the Wild. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to markcoleman.org. That's markcoleman.org. Or you can get there at newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabara. You've been listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Tadra Hamill, author of Therapy Chicken. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how the wisdom of the flock can bring you joy.
Hey. Are you a First Nations, Métis, or Inuit student? Not convinced university, college, or vocational trade school is possible? Or wondering what you should do after high school? Inspire can help you and your friends. Register for Inspire's free Indigenous mentorship program, Rivers to Success. Joining Rivers to Success gets you access to great information, great prizes, and exciting content. Discover careers and post-secondary paths geared towards Indigenous students across Turtle Island, just like you. Register online today at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca. Prizes, information, and fun are waiting.